a whole new world of beautiful lighting for any application. The showroom at Barry Electric and Lighting is filled with hundreds of light fixtures for you to choose from. Let the lighting professionals at Barry Electric and Lighting help you find the right product at precisely the right price while supplies last during this huge showroom display sale. Barry Electric and Lighting also has the very latest in LED lighting, silent ventilation products, built-in vacuum systems, and lighting controls. They have thousands of products to help make your home truly special. It's the showroom display sale, only at Barry Electric and Lighting on the Barry Montpelier Road, online at barryelectric.com.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Jim Condon. We all made it to a Friday. Coming up today on the program, thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Coming up today, we're going to chat in our second hour this morning. Governor Shumlin will be joining us here live in our studios. Looking forward to your calls for him today. Let me give you the phone numbers, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll free at 877-291-8255. We'll kick off our program this morning. We're going to talk about some criminal justice issues. And let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Chittenden County State's Attorney T.J. Donovan. Good morning.
Mark, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on your victory. Apparently, you were the top vote getter. You got more votes than anybody in Chittenden County. So what does that say?
It says that I ran unopposed. That's what it says.
Okay.
And I had the both nominations, the Democratic, and I had the Republican as well, which I didn't seek, but I got enough write-in votes, I guess, in the primary. So I was on both ballots and grateful for the support of the residents of Chittenden County.
Let's talk a little politics before we talk about criminal justice issues. You decided to endorse actually a bunch of people, three people in other state's attorney races. And we had Tom Kelly on the program, who's the Washington County State's Attorney. He was just defeated in his bid by one of the people that you supported. And he said this isn't a job that should involve politics. It shouldn't involve endorsements. Why do you think differently?
Well, state's attorneys are elected. In fact, state's attorneys are one of the few office holders in the Vermont that are actually listed in the Vermont Constitution as elected officers. And I think it's important that we understand why prosecutors are elected. Prosecutors are elected, in my opinion, to reflect the values of the communities they represent in the criminal justice system. The criminal justice system is a very complex, confusing system for a lot of folks. And there's an incredible amount of discretion in the criminal justice system. And I think that's why we want an elected official to reflect those values, to bring about policies that reflect the values of the community, to exercise their discretion in a way that's consistent with those values, and to be accountable to the people. You know, that's incredibly important. Prosecutors have enormous and awesome power, the power to charge, the power to investigate, the power to get people's documents, to get a subpoena. And left unchecked, that power can be abused. I feel very strongly about this, Mark. The most important quality of any good prosecutor, in my opinion, is restraint, is not filing a charge. Very easy to file a charge. And once you file that charge, regardless of guilt or innocence, that person, the accused, their life is changed forever. They are now branded. And so I think it's very important that we exercise restraint, that we have policies that are consistent with the values of this state. And frankly, that's why prosecutors are elected. Now, it's not to say that you make political judgments in terms of cases, but it's about policies and it's about the administration of justice. And, you know, the bottom line is it is a political position and you better campaign for it or you're going to be out of a job.
The people that you supported were Democrats. You're a Democrat, too. But what was it that you were looking for, these people that you supported? What different were you looking for them to be doing?
I mean, as we all know in this state, there's been a great debate in the state about how we treat addiction. We know that we have a heroin epidemic. And the criminal justice system is a big part of this response. And traditionally, we are a reactive system. We wait for something bad to happen, and then we bring a case. What we've tried to do in Chittenden County, what Governor Shumlin has tried to do in this state, is to be much more proactive, to have prevention strategies, to have intervention. And that really, the prosecutor, because again, that charging authority, really should be a leader on this. They can bring people together. And what we've done in Chittenden County by creating the Rapid Intervention Community Court, which is kind of that model, which is going to be rolled out statewide, it's very simple. Bring people in, as work with the police, identify the at-risk people. So somebody who's struggling with an addiction, and when we talk about discretion, Mark, it's really the criminal justice system, when we talk about it, not only in this state but nationally, it's such an arbitrary system. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have all these disproportionate things in our system, such as more African Americans incarcerated than whites, the poor, and it's because it's an arbitrary system. And what we're trying to do in Chittenden County, what we're trying to do across the state, is level the playing field by using evidence-based risk assessment tools to measure not only somebody's risk to themselves and to the community, but what the underlying need is. Is it addiction? Is it mental illness? Is it both? Then link that person to somebody in the community to get that person help to address that root cause. And let me tell you, if we can get people stable, sober, on the road to recovery, that enhances our public safety, and it's far cheaper. The program that we run in Chittenden County has demonstrated that it works. The recidivism rate is much lower than the standard rate the state has through the traditional system. So it's a change that's going on in the system. Why I endorse these other candidates is because they've committed to developing these programs in their counties. It's got to be local. It's got to be organic. It can't be a Chittenden County program across the state. That's not going to work. But the framework's there, and the prosecutor has to be the leader, in my opinion.
Why can't the Chittenden County program just be applied to other counties?
The framework can, but I think it's all about what are the resources in each county. I mean, let's be honest. There's more resources in Chittenden County than there are in other counties.
Right.
And so because instead of going through the criminal justice system, what we're doing is we're then linking to somebody in the community. And we got to make sure that they get the money, they get the resources, and then we're doing monitoring, we're doing compliance, we're having that that relationship where we're saying, hey, is TJ Dunham compliant with whatever the treatment plan is? Working with the respective hubs in our system, the hub and spoke system, to make sure that people are getting into treatment. We also have to work with the medical community. They have to be on board. We need more doctors involved in this fight. And so the prosecutor has great power in this community. And I've kind of viewed the job as much bigger than just showing up in the courthouse every day and filing a charge.
Mm-hmm. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. I was thinking it would be impossible for me to ask you about cases that you didn't bring. I mean, we're talking here about the discretion that you have, but you probably couldn't. Could you give me an example generically of a case that you haven't brought?
Sure.
And why you didn't bring it?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of them. A case that comes to mind for me, young woman who started off with a prescription drug abuse addiction. That turned to heroin. Stealing. She had a couple of kids. She lost her kids. Ends up one day, can't find, and the backstory is important here, Mark. Doesn't want to be addicted to heroin. Tried to get off of it. Can't get into the methadone clinic because we got a waiting list. Can't get a doctor to prescribe her maintenance meds such as Suboxone, buprenorphine. So she does what any sick person would do. She buys her medicine on the street. She buys the pills on the street, the bupes. Day in question, she can't get her pills on the street. She ends up at Kmart, Shelburne Road, there on Route 7, and she is huffing whatever the aerosol can is, and she is found essentially passed out unconscious in the bathroom at Kmart. She is arrested for retail theft, for stealing the aerosol. She comes into our system, talk to her. Why'd you do it? She said to me, I didn't want to get sick. That statement, in my opinion, sums up this entire debate, that it is a health issue, that addiction is a disease, and we have to treat it as such. So, to answer your question, the traditional system, that retail theft, we bring her in, we can do a couple things. We're going to put her in jail. She's going to get out. We're not going to do anything on the addiction. Put her on probation, load her up with conditions. She's not going to comply. We can say to her, hey, we're going to pay. We're going to hit you where it hurts. We're going to tell you to pay a fine. She's got no money.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do? We can get her into treatment. We can try to stabilize her. We can try to get her on the road to recovery. In this case, she has been sober. It's working. We know it's not going to work for everybody. There's going to be relapses. But the other thing we got to understand, too, from a criminal justice system is that relapse is part of recovery. In the past, Mark, people would have relapses. We'd put them back in jail.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. And it really is kind of bringing a public health approach to the criminal justice system, utilizing those strategies of prevention, intervention, to enhance our public safety, far cheaper than how we do business in the traditional way.
Okay, but how far do you go on this? Because you just had this week a case where you've got a Colchester police officer who's accused of taking drugs from the evidence locker, taking a gun, giving it to a felon. And, you know, I was surprised reading the news accounts. Really, the focus is what you're talking about here. It's all about getting this guy into treatment. But, you know, this is a lot more serious than taking a can of aerosol.
Absolutely, Mark. You're absolutely right. Look, the line is very clear to me. You can't do anything. You can't divert any case that will jeopardize the integrity of the system. I think most people, again, why are we elected? I think most people in Chittenden County would support that young woman charged with that retail theft getting into treatment. I can tell you this, and I agree with you. I feel terrible for this officer about his addiction. But my feelings stop there when the allegation is that you're giving guns that are in evidence to felons.
Is there a system in place in Chittenden County where police department evidence lockers, there's a second person?
That is a conversation that we're having this week. I think everybody's looking at their policies. Everybody's looking at the protocols. I've said this publicly. I'll say it here today. We are going to have to dismiss cases. Now, this is no longer about guilt or innocence. This is about whether or not the government did its job and preserved and maintained the evidence and really preserved and maintained the integrity of the system.
So how many cases do you think you're going to have to dismiss?
We don't know. We're doing that review right now. I can tell you, there's a lot of them.
And are these cases that are possession cases and you don't have the evidence in the locker, or is it because of the integrity of the officer who arrested them, or what is it?
It's everything. Did this, number one, was this officer involved in the actual case? If he was, and we can't prove it with other people, that case will have to be dismissed. And then, in other cases where he may not have been involved as the responding or in the investigating officer, was he essentially the custodian of the evidence by virtue of his position as in charge of the evidence room? If that's the case, and if the allegations are true, we have a chain of custody problem. And the allegation, certainly the defense, would be that the integrity of the evidence is jeopardized and it's been tampered with. If that turns out to be true, we're going to do the right thing, the difficult thing, but we are what we're going to do is maintain the integrity of the system, and unfortunately, that's going to result in dismissals of cases.
Is there anything else beside having maybe two people in charge of the evidence locker that could be done to prevent another one of these?
I don't know. I think always, you know, technology is probably something we need to look at. I don't have an answer right now, but I think everybody is, I know in Chittenden County, we are all looking at what the policies and the procedures are. This is an incredibly unfortunate situation. I know this officer. He worked right downstairs from us at CUSI, the Chittenden Unit for Special Investigations, for a number of years. And, you know, I got called Monday night at 10 o'clock about this. My reaction was one of disbelief.
Was there too much sympathy shown towards him at these initial hearings?
No, I think he was treated like anybody else. You know, and I think the bail statute, both in the federal system and the state system, is pretty clear. You can't punish people by virtue of bail. It really is, you know, are you a risk of non-appearance? He's not. The fact that he's going to get in treatment is a good thing, and we're going to have to see where the court goes and what the prosecution does with this case. But this is a case that, at the end of the day, is about the integrity of the system.
Go back here. You said that the rapid intervention court system has reduced the recidivism rate compared to statewide. By how much? Statistically significant?
Yes. The statewide rate, how the state defines it.
Or is it like 1.5% difference?
No. The state rate is about 43%. Now, the state defines recidivism as if you've been reconvicted and you've been sentenced to more than 90 days in jail. Frankly, you're missing a whole group of people. That's 43%. Okay, 4 out of 10 people were in jail, back in jail in the state. We did an outcome study by the Vermont Center for Criminal Research, Max Schluter's operation, attached to Norwich. I always get the name wrong. And it's not apples to apples. And we did it. The state does theirs on 3 years worth of data. We did ours on 2. But for those, and we did it in the group was about over 700 people that had gone through our program at the time. Of those that went through our program and successfully completed it, it was a 7% recidivism rate. Of those that went back, that went through our program but failed our program, but still received some sort of benefit of going through the program, the recidivism rate was 23%. So very significant. Clearly demonstrates that taking a public health approach to the issues of addiction and mental illness works.
Describe how this works. You can use me as an example here. So I get arrested, and is it the rapid intervention court is for people only with possession?
No.
Or if I've been dealing drugs, can I go in there too?
It's not going to be for drugs. Again, it's not for me. The bright line test is the integrity of the system, which gives me a lot of discretion. But generally, the cases we're looking at are possession cases, possession of heroin, possession of cocaine, property offenses, retail thefts, some frauds, some larcenies, anything that we're going to say is going to say this is probably drug related. Often property crimes are driven by drugs. We also look at disorderly conducts, unlawful trespasses, the cases out of Church Street, if you will, in City Hall Park, where really mental illness plays a role. And so that population of cases, generally in the traditional system, arrest is made in the street, paperwork comes into prosecutor, prosecutors are trained lawyers. We don't care about the person. We're looking at the legal elements. What are the charges we can file? What we did is we've now diverted that case to a guy by the name of Emmett Helrick, former Burlington Police Department officer. And we reach out to these folks. It's a voluntary program. We say, here's the deal. We want to help you. We got to ask you some questions, which is the assessment. If you do what we ask you to do, we will not file the criminal charge. So we sit down with you. We do this risk assessment. Based on that, we then make the referral to whatever the appropriate social service agency is in our community. We get releases signed. And then we have monitoring. David Lines, guy from Burlington who used to run the Oasis Diner, is my compliance officer. And I tell people all the time, he's great at it because of the work of working in the diner. He talked to everybody. Yeah. He knows how to deal with people, you know? And so we build in compliance 30, 60, 90 days. Really, that's the bandwidth we have to do right now. And if you are in compliance with whatever the treatment plan is, that clinician in the community, not us, we're not the clinicians, said to do, we will not file the charge. And for me, it's if our job is public safety, and this has demonstrated that it is working and it's enhancing our public safety, I'm not sure we need to file that charge. I'm not sure what that fifth retail theft conviction is going to do to enhance our public safety. I know if we get her sober, how that's going to work. And that's, for me, Mark, and really, again, getting back to why there's a change. And first of all, it's unprecedented in the state that we had these contested races in the state's attorneys. But it's a philosophical shift going on in the criminal justice system, not only in this state, but nationally, about what does accountability mean? Does it just mean punishment? Does it just mean jail? Or can it mean getting sober? Because you talk to folks who've struggled with it, getting sober is really hard work. And then throw all these other issues in that makes people's lives incredibly complicated. They don't have access to transportation. They don't have money to pay whatever the copay is. They don't have insurance. So we're just trying to make it simple. We're trying to make it direct, and we're trying to make it accessible to folks. Really, it's about access to care at the end of the day. It's about access to health care for a lot of these folks.
We're talking to Chittenden County Prosecutor T.J. Donovan. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. And you felt the incumbents in these state's attorney races were leaning a little too heavy on the law enforcement and not the treatment side?
Well, I don't know if they were, you know, leaning too heavy, but they weren't committing to changing, in my opinion. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not my decision. It's the voter's decision. But I felt strongly that what Governor Shumlin went out on a limb last year, frankly, in his state of the state, talking about the heroin epidemic. And he talked about the criminal justice system like no other public official in this state or in this country has. Really brave. And what he did was, frankly, he gave us, the practitioners, the license to be creative and to be innovative. And we need to respond. We need to respond. The people on the ground need to respond to that call. And, you know, waiting a day, waiting a month, it's too much. The work needs to start. And it needed to start long ago. And when things weren't moving, you know, I've been in primaries. I've been in contested races. You take positions.
What did he say that you would describe as brave?
Well, what was brave was saying that not only that addiction is a disease, but we shouldn't prosecute it. Mark, when we look at the history of criminal justice in politics, going back to Richard Nixon, what do we have? We have the war on drugs. We have tough on crime. And politically, it has always made political sense to be hard, to be tough. And what you saw was policies like three strikes and you're out. You had
Rockefeller
drug laws. And because it worked. Because let me ask you something. Who's voting for the drug addict?
Right.
You know, they're not giving money. They're not. They don't vote. It's a constituency that really brings no benefit to any elected official. Let's just be honest about it. Okay. But for Governor Shumlin to get out there and talk about it and say, we don't need to prosecute these folks. We need to get them to treatment. We need to break down the barriers to care, to have access to health care, to have treatment on demand, to tie it into early education. Yeah, in my opinion, it was brave, and he deserves credit.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You have acknowledged you're a politician. You're a Democrat.
You say like it's a bad thing.
Well, I'm just setting, counselor. I'm just, we take it as we'll stipulate it. All right,
we will stipulate to that.
So, what do you think happened in the governor's race here?
You know, I think what happened was there is enormous anxiety in the middle class in this state. There's enormous anxiety in the middle class across this country. And what you see, in my opinion, both nationally and in this state, is people play to the extremes. You play to the right, you play to the left. And the middle class, what they care about, in my opinion, is, can I pay my mortgage? Can I pay my property taxes? Is gas going to hit $4 a gallon this week? How can I, do I got enough money to cover daycare this week? Retirement? You know, the American dream, Mark, of trying to get ahead for a lot in the middle class no longer exists. It's, are we keeping pace? Really a fundamental shift. And I think people just got fed up with it. Or I don't want to say fed up, actually. They got apathetic that folks in Washington, folks in Montpelier weren't listening to them. And I think what you saw that, in my opinion, with a record low turnout. You also saw a lot of people who, for whatever reason, I think there was a variety of reasons, who stayed home, you know, or gave a protest vote. And you talk to folks who say, hey, listen, I didn't vote for Governor Shumlin, but geez, if I knew it was this close, I would have, you know? And, you know, I thought Governor Shumlin had a great line. He was talking somewhere, and he said, "You know, our democracy is only as good as those who vote." record low turnout in this election. And, you know, you call it a protest vote. It's not a protest vote. You didn't go out and vote. And so I think what we have to do is get back to the basics a little bit in this state. I'm a big supporter of Governor Shulman. I think he's done a great job, in my opinion, on a lot of issues. On criminal justice issues, Mark, this guy, our governor, has done more than any governor in this nation, in my opinion. But also, I think it's an opportunity for Governor Shulman to reconnect with voters. He's been very clear, you know, message received. I think it's a real opportunity for our governor to reconnect with regular folks, to hear their concerns, and make sure those concerns are demonstrated and heard by virtue of the policies he puts forth.
But if it's a problem with the middle class, the struggling middle class, and all the things you described, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but why was there such a disparity, say, between Peter Welch's numbers and Peter Shulman's numbers? Why didn't that extend up to Welch, too?
Because Governor Shulman's closer to the people. He's going to make decisions every day that impact Vermonters every single day. Congressman Welch, great guy. Love him. I think he's doing a tremendous job in Washington. When you're in Washington, you're more removed from the folks here at home. Governor Shulman has an extremely difficult job of making decisions every day. And once you make a decision, you're going to upset somebody. And, you know, that's what I think happened here. And I know this about Governor Shulman. He gets it, in my opinion. You know, he knows. I was so proud of him, Mark. I got to tell you, in that press conference that he held the morning after the election, he was humble. He was contrite, but he was firm on some of the commitments he's made. And it really demonstrated to me that he listened, and he listened to Vermonters. And again, that's why I think this election is a great opportunity for him. And I think he's going to do great things this next term.
You don't think it's deeply politically damaging?
I don't. I think Peter Shulman has the best political skills in this state. I think he's a charismatic figure. I think he's a caring person. I think he's a person that when you meet him, Mark, in person, he is a wonderful guy. People like him. You know, I have a friend who tells me, I'm not a Pete Shulman guy, but I vote for him. Why do you vote for him? Because he called me and he asked me about my mother. That's who Peter Shulman is.
Let's go to Mallet's Bay. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. It's not a political question per se, and it's not a comment on the governor's race, but I live in Mallet's Bay. I went down to Dartmouth-Hitchcock yesterday for a medical appointment. And while I was down there, I drove by a gas station, and the price of gas was $2.97 a gallon. And I drove back, and I stopped in Montpelier, and I actually filled my car up in Montpelier at a gas station, and the gas was $3.04. And, you know, in Burlington, if you drive around, you're hard-pressed to find gas for less than $3.20. And I'd like to ask Mr. Donovan if there's anything that can be legally done to stop the carpetbaggers that own the oil companies that are just totally abusing people that buy gas in Chittenden County. When I say abuse, I'm talking about basically price rigging.
What are you talking about with carpetbaggers?
Carpetbaggers are people that go in and make a lot of money unnecessarily. That's what I look at the four companies that are gas distributors in Chittenden County. They're basically taking advantage of the public. Their gas is about 25 more a gallon.
We got it. Is there gouging going on?
I don't know. I have the same experience. I think everybody does. I drive to one place in Burlington to get gas because it's the cheapest. Down on Pine Street, Cumberland Farms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Driving around, you do notice that outside Burlington, outside Chittenden County, gas seems to be less expensive. I don't have the answer. I don't know the market forces really at work. I know that Attorney General Sorrell has looked at this. I think he's been very clear that unless there's collusion among different gas station owners, there's really no grounds to prosecute. So I think it's more complicated than people get in terms of, is there criminal wrongdoing? But I couldn't agree more with the caller. It's painfully evident to everybody that gas is more expensive in Burlington than it is in other parts of the state.
Go back here to the governor's race.
Yep.
I can understand in your theory here, it would explain, for example, the governor losing some communities in Addison County with the gas pipeline.
Yep.
But he lost Williston, Colchester, Milton. I mean, you're pretty in tune with what's going on in Chittenden County.
Yep.
What did he do in Chittenden County that ticked people off?
I think it was a lot of things. And again, I'll get back to the point that the governor, whether it's Peter Shumlin, Howard Dean, or Jim Douglas, you're really accountable to the folks because you're making decisions day in and day out. And let me say this. I think a lot of blame of that anxiety of property taxes, okay, that not necessarily the governor's in control of, but he was held accountable for those rising property taxes in our state. Look, I think it was also a message about healthcare. You know, and I think the concern, too, so when you have this anxiety out there with regular folks about just getting through the day, not getting ahead anymore, Mark, just getting through the day, and then you say, boy, what does this healthcare thing mean to me? Do we need healthcare reform? Absolutely. But we got to make sure it's affordable for regular people. It is about access to care. We got to make sure it's affordable and people understand it. And I think change is scary to folks. And I think the publicity regarding the problems leading up to it were damaging. And so I think it was a vote too to send a message about, hey, get the house in order and let's make sure that we get this done the right way and do a competent job. So people care about government competence. And, you know, and it's not just the governor's office. It's my office. It's what we're seeing, frankly, in Colchester. Competence. We want competence. But I also think, again, this is a real opportunity for the governor to reconnect and communicate. You know, when we talk about healthcare, you know, we're really talking about three separate things. You know, you the Health Connect, the website. You got universal or single payer, whatever you want to call it. And then you got the Green Mountain Care Board. And you know, from my reading, I'm not an expert, it seems like the Green Mountain Care Board has done a tremendous job and actually have reduced costs. We should be celebrating that good work, the Green Mountain Care Board. Algo Bay's done a great job. And so I think what happened to a certain part is that to the average Vermonter, you hear about health care and you lump it all in one. It's actually three separate things. And so there has been some success with the Green Mountain Care Board, and that should be acknowledged, and frankly, it should be celebrated. Let's make sure that the Health Connect works, and let's move forward and get this thing done, and let's get it working for regular Vermonters.
Forbes, Tony, hang on one sec. We'll get to your calls for TJ Donovan. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Davis from Twin City Subaru. Last year, we partnered with the Vermont Food Bank during Subaru's annual Share the Love event. During that event, every new car sold raised $250 for the Vermont Food Bank, providing over 50,000 meals to Vermont families in need. This year, our goal is $25,000. This lofty goal will provide 75,000 meals for Vermont families. With your help, we can reach that goal. 100% of the funds raised for the Vermont Food Bank stay here and help our neighbors, friends, co-workers, and families in need. So starting November 20th through the end of the year, every new car sold at Twin City Subaru will be eligible for the $250 donation to the Vermont Food Bank. Together, we can make a difference. Visit our website at TwinCitySubaru.com for more details. Come on, Vermont, we can raise the bar and meet that goal. Please help the Vermont Food Bank and Twin City Subaru Share the Love event. Help reach our goal, because no child should go to bed hungry in Vermont.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tom Mihuron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana and produce, Gary and seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our our incredible wine department. Family run for over 70 years. Mehurin Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Trust Invisible Fence Brand to protect your pets at home. Our pet safety experts will customize a guaranteed containment solution that keeps your pet safe and ensures you and your family total peace of mind at a tenth of the cost of traditional fencing. Invisible Fence Brand, the brand vets recommend most for dog safety and freedom.
Your local Invisible Fence dealer, Invisible Fence of North Country and Plainfield, 454-8563.
This holiday season, you can collect and win cash and other great prizes with the new Holiday Collect and Win from the Vermont Lottery. Use your smartphone to download the free Collect and Win app or go online. From now till December 13th, when you play qualifying draw games like Powerball, Megabucks, and others, you can scan the ticket or enter online to collect game symbols. Collect six game symbols on one card and you're entered for a chance to win over $50,000 in prizes. Go to vglottery.com for more collect and win details. Please play responsibly.
Jack Castellaneta, this may be the most important weekend of the year for car and truck buyers. It's the holiday concert sale event at Formula Nissan in Barrie. You've put together some deals we didn't even think were possible.
We love our customers and we love new customers, so we've put extra Formula Nissan discounts on every vehicle in stock. We've cut out the fine print, cut out the middleman, and made it simple to drive a new car or truck, and simpler means cheaper.
0% financing for 72 months. Huge factory discounts, even factory bonus cash up to $4,000, and holiday concert sale event specials you'll find only at Formula Nissan. But these are limited time offers.
We'll have live music on Saturday by Undone, hot dogs, refreshments, and special events all weekend long. But the big news is the savings. It's almost like Black Friday has come early. If you've waited all year to make a decision on a new vehicle, you win. But it's this Friday and Saturday only at Formula Nissan.
Formula Nissan, Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut, and at FormulaNissan.com.
Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll chat with Governor Peter Shumlin. A moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer, maybe you're a politician getting, you know, brochures printed up, you're going to want to do that locally, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you might
buy local.
You might do those brochures and everything else associated with a campaign, and you might do that locally at a place like Jet Service Envelope. You can reach them at 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Just got an email in TJ, a listener saying, Shumlin Love Fest, disgusting bromance. What do you say to that?
You know, I say that loyalty is incredibly important in politics and in public service. What we've been able to do in Chittenden County, in large part, is because of Peter Shumlin's support, not just when he was governor. When he was president of the Senate, the initial funding for this program that has helped a lot of people came from Peter Shumlin and because of Peter Shumlin. No fanfare, no publicity, because it was the right thing to do. And frankly, he took a chance on me. He didn't know me. I didn't really know him, but we agreed that this could be a good idea. And you know, Mark, we mentioned this earlier. I am a Democrat. He's our governor. I'm sticking with him.
Let's go to Corinne.
And let me say, and I trust that Peter Shumlin, because he has, in my opinion, been so good after the election that he is, he said, I got it, message received, that we're going to see really, I think, a good session in the next couple of years. Pete Shumlin, I'm staying with him. He's our governor.
Let's go to Corinth. Forbes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I respectfully take a position on some of our issues in the state where we do our dirty laundry in public. Example given, the governor went on to nationwide media and discussed the plight over in Rutland with drugs and things like that. And then I watched one of our major industries in the state get trashed in the midst of that, such as Rolling Stone's article and front page production of a bottle of maple syrup with pure heroin on it. I watched New York the city, basically. You couldn't even walk on the streets. Well, there was no fanfare there. They went in and they recognized they had a problem. They cleaned it up. We heard about it after they cleaned it up. This latest issue with the police officer involved a local basis, just making the comments that we've got to now go back and review all the cases involved in that. Doesn't that open up Pandora's box? Do we really need to do that?
Yes. This is again about the integrity of the criminal justice system. And, you know, at the end of the day, the burden is very clear. It's on the state to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And how you prove that case is that you have evidence that has been preserved and maintained and tampered with. Now, I don't know if it has, but because of these allegations that drugs and guns were coming out of the evidence room, we have to look at everything. Because if we don't, the defense attorneys will. And, you know, again, the prosecutor's job, rule one, it's not to seek convictions, it's to do justice. And in this case, justice dictates that we do a thorough review of the evidence and make the right decisions.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Cabot. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Doing great, thanks.
Good. Can we move away from the governor's fan club discussion for a bit?
You want to talk fly fishing?
Yeah, hey, that sounds great.
Okay.
I have a question, and it might take me a little bit to get there, so if you just bear with me here.
All right.
In terms of the recidivism and the diversion court,
yep.
I know the short answer is it all depends on circumstances, but what I'm trying to get to is your reading on your responsibilities as a state's attorney. And so when you look at recidivism rates, I don't know, have you chunked it up to look at violations or criminal activity where there's an issue of a drug background involved versus one where there is not drug background involved? And the reason I say that is I think we all recognize the large part that drug dependency can play on people's behaviors. But when it's not part of a person's background, whether it's retail theft or something like that, I think that's the real key to whether or not the diversion program is working when you look at those recidivism rates. Because I believe that from a behavioral point of view, people who have a choice, people who are not involved with drugs and have a choice about their behaviors, will persist in those behaviors that they find reinforcing. And so if they know that you're going to get diversion, then there's really not much of an impetus to clean up their act. And so that's the long way of saying, have you taken a look at recidivism rates, kind of separating out that the influence of drugs?
It's a good question, and we haven't, and frankly, I don't know if we could. But let me say this. I mean, if I understand your question and your point, that you're saying, hey, if people know that they're, you know, there's not going to be a consequence, that they're going to be diverted, they're not going to change their behavior, there won't be a deterrent. And I disagree with that, because right now, you know, in our system, both state and federal, more federal, there are mandatory minimums that if you do certain crimes, you're going to jail. But people continue to commit those crimes. And so the threat of jail has not acted as a deterrent to reduce crime. And so, again, I think what we have to do is look at new ways to hold people accountable. And we have to be driven by data. We have to be driven by outcomes. The criminal justice system, public safety, drugs, mental illness, it's an emotional issue. And that's why we really need to look at the data to guide us about what works. You know, let me say this, too. That for me, this is about harm reduction. You know, take these folks who are using heroin, who are addicts. If we can get them sober, and they're not breaking into people's homes, they're not breaking into people's cars, are they world-class citizens? No. But if they're not breaking into people's homes, they're not breaking into people's cars, That's good for public safety. Now, the next stage of this is, how do we build in a transition to jobs? How do we make sure that these folks have the opportunity for job training so they can get employment? Because I can tell you that the demographic we work with in the court system are often the underemployed, the unemployed, mostly with a high school education, who have no skills. And so it is about getting people stable and sober. But the next phase, the tough part, is how do we get them working?
Let's go to Colchester. Debbie, good morning.
Hi, TJ. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement with distracted driving?
Sure. Debbie, how are you?
How are you?
Good. Good to hear. Good to hear you.
You too.
Debbie was a victim of a terrible case, Mark.
Yeah.
Received a lot of press attention. She was hit by a young woman who was on her cell phone, sent a text, and Debbie, who was had a great job.
Walking her dog.
At 9 o'clock at night, and I think it was, frankly, we almost lost Debbie. But her life has been changed forever. And really, the credit goes to Debbie, to folks like Debbie, and to a good buddy of mine, local lawyer up in Burlington, Chris Maley, who really led the effort down in Montpelier to end distracted driving, to keep people off their cell phones. Not just texting, but keep people off their cell phones while they're driving. Senator Dick Mazza was a great supporter of this, and again, Governor Shumlin signed that bill. And look, we're all guilty of it. You know, I'm still guilty of it. I wear the wristband. When you listen to Debbie, I think all you have to do.
You're still on your phone in the car?
And I'm not. No,
okay.
I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of it, certainly in the past. And
okay. We're
trying our best for everybody to get off. You know, the crazy thing, Mark, is this.
I was ready for a little citizen's arrest.
Yeah, I know. The crazy thing is this, you know, when you're sitting around and you're looking at people driving, it's amazing how many people are on their phone. And it's scary. You know, got two kids. You know, I got to make sure that my behavior has been modified, and it has. I got to make sure that other people's behavior has been modified because people can get hurt. So, Debbie, thank you for calling in.
Have you seen any decline?
You know, I have. I mean, you know, my wife and I, we hold each other accountable, you know, even before this. And, you know, as I said, Chris Maley brought a fellow by the name of Joel Feldman, who runs this organization, you know, NDD and Distracted Driving. He lost his daughter, a beautiful young woman, I think 21, 22 years old, who was hit. She was walking at a crosswalk down in New Jersey, and a person who was distracted on the phone hit her and killed her. And he has made this his life's mission to raise awareness about this and to pass legislation like Vermont did. And all you got to do is listen to people like Debbie, to listen to people like Joel Feldman, and you have to be encouraged. You have to be motivated to change. And as I said, my wife and I, we hold each other accountable, and all you have to do is look in the back seat, look at your two babies and say, you know what? It can wait.
Let's go to Hinesburg. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I wanted to bring up Ferguson for a minute. And the comment goes to police behavior, and I realize it must be very difficult to be a police officer and go on and off from possibly having your life threatened to, you know, what if, and again, I wasn't there, I don't know what happened, but what if his life was being threatened, the officer, then he regained control, but he wasn't able to snap out of being, you know, fearful or angry. And I'm just suggesting that it may have been possible that the police officer did kill this guy. But again, I'm also trying to be empathetic towards the fact that it's hard to be a police officer in that situation where you're fearing for your life.
No doubt. And, you know, I don't know what happened in Ferguson. I think the grand jury has not reached its decision out there, but it's certainly, I know they're preparing. You know, we just finished a case last week, Mark, regarding a officer-involved shooting in Winooski, where an officer was found guilty of lying to his fellow officer about what occurred and for essentially reckless endangerment for firing his gun. And, you know, the police do have a difficult job. And the standard is pretty clear. It's, you know, are you in fear of imminent bodily injury or death? And in the Winooski case, there was no evidence to suggest that the officer was in fear of bodily injury or death. And again, it's not an easy thing to do, but when we talk about the integrity of the system, we have to hold each other accountable. And this was an unarmed citizen who was shot. Unarmed citizen, frankly, who was mentally ill, who was walking on the street and was stopped. Things happened. But the fact of the matter was that we had an officer who lied about why he shot a citizen. And we're going to hold him accountable, and we did.
There was some video going around last week about a case in Burlington, too. Did you look at that video, and have you done anything about it?
We have, and we have looked at the video. It's still under investigation. It's being reviewed by the Burlington police. My initial reaction is the officers act in a justified manner. You know, that wasn't the snippet of the video on the Burlington Free Press was not the full video. And I think that's always important to know that, you know, we have to understand what is going on in the totality of the circumstances. I got to tell you, and if you can, everybody should do this. You know, you do what's called a ride-along with the police. Mark, I got to tell you, I did it a few years ago. But I do it. It's on a Friday. I think it was a Friday night. And for some reason, I dress like it's work. I get a pair of suit pants on, and I get a blazer on. And let me tell you, I was never more scared than being on the corner of Church and Main Street at 2:30 in the morning when the bars let out sober. Okay? It's crazy. It's scary. The police have a very difficult job. They're dealing with a mob, frankly. And the training that these guys have, the experience, the restraint that the police exercise is remarkable. They have a tremendous, and that really gave me a different perspective. And so when we hear about these things, it's always important to get the full story. And that snippet, that video that was put on the Free Press was just a snippet of what happened. And my initial reaction is that the officers acted consistent with their training, consistent with their experience, and exercised force that is going to be justified.
Let's go to Huntington. Rich.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Back quickly to the addiction issue. I'm very concerned about this shift to treating crime-offending junkies as victims of a disease too much. I mean, the issue is accountability to taxpayers and to crime victims. As a taxpayer, I don't like rewarding an offender with $30,000 or $40,000 worth of inpatient rehab. For one thing, it sends a powerful message to junkies out there that all I have to do is stick a gun in a store clerk's face and I will get my treatment. And I don't like, I just wonder, how can you look someone in the face who has had the privacy and comfort of their home shattered by a burglary or having their door kicked in at 2 o'clock in the morning and tell that person, I am not going to bring criminal charges against this person because they have a disease?
All right. Good question.
Yeah, I would say that if it's a burglary or it's a robbery, those cases are prosecuted. Again, the standard is very clear to me. It's about the integrity of the system. People are going to expect when there's a burglary into somebody's home, when there's a robbery, when there's a weapon involved, that these folks be prosecuted and they be held accountable when they go to jail. And they do. I can cite numerous examples of folks going to jail, frankly, for some a long period of time. It's the lower level property offenses that I think we're working towards. But let me just say one thing to Rich. You know, hey, $30,000 or $40,000 to inpatient treatment, and I don't know if that's the right number, but let's assume that it is. Compare that to the $56,000 it costs to incarcerate a person in prison in this state for 1 year. Compare that to the $77,000 it costs to incarcerate a woman in this state. And then measure it based on the recidivism rate that 4 out of 10 are back in jail. And so when we talk about wasting taxpayer dollars, we have to look at the outcomes in the criminal justice system. And you're going to, I don't see how you justify $77,000 when it is not reducing crime.
Congratulations on the Turning Point Award, which we never talked
Thank
about
you.
Either. TJ Donovan is the Chittenden County State's Attorney, joining us here live in our plush studios in downtown Waterbury. We're going to take a break here. We'll take a commercial break here. Coming up next, we'll talk with Governor Peter Shumlin. Welcome your calls at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEB Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, FM 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, and the flagship AM 550 WDEB Waterbury and Montpelier. We'll be back right after these words.
AP Radio News.